This podcast may contain content that is graphic and disturbing in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
How very much I've loved you. How very much I've tried my best to give you the good life. It was said by the greatest of prophets, from time immemorial, no man takes my life from me, I lay my life down. If we can't live in peace, then let's die in peace. We've been so betrayed. We have been so terribly betrayed.
Before starting this episode, I need to provide a warning that it contains extremely disturbing content relating to mass suicide and murder. We saw in the last episode that Congressman Ryan prepared to leave Guyana after being attacked with a knife at the Jonestown compound. His group started boarding the two planes at the airstrip, but were ambushed by gunmen who killed the congressman and four others. Meanwhile, back at Jonestown, Jones announced a white knight and gathered his congregation in the pavilion, where he gave what was to be his final sermon, where he called for his followers to lay down their lives. He made a recording of himself giving this sermon, which would later be referred to as the death tape. While this was happening, his minders were preparing a drink laced with cyanide, tranquilizers, and sedatives. There was a large metal tub which contained a fruit-flavored drink to which they added the cocktail of poisons. It would be later determined during the investigation that the cyanide had been slowly stockpiled over a number of years. The cyanide could only be purchased in small batches and only with a license. It was commonly bought by jewelers to clean gold. So Jones forged a license and managed to purchase enough to carry out the mass murders. Investigators also found a memo from Jones's doctor where he wrote the following, quote, "Cyanide is one of the most rapidly acting poisons. I would like to give 2 grams to a large pig to see how effective our batch is. But it's not known if this experiment was ever carried out." You are now about to hear the actual audio of the so-called death tape, which recorded the final moments of some 900 men, women, and children. There is no other way to describe it other than extremely disturbing, so you may wish to skip the audio, which goes for about 13 minutes. You can resume listening at around the 16-minute mark.
How very much I've loved you. How very much I've tried my best to give you the good life. But in spite of all of that I've tried, a handful of our people, with their lives, have made our life impossible. There's no way to detach ourselves from what's happened today. Not only we're in a compound situation, not only are there those who have left and committed the betrayal of the century, some have stolen children from others, and they're in pursuit right now to kill them because they stole their children. And we are sitting here waiting on a powder keg. I don't think this is what we want to do with our babies. I don't think that's what we had in mind to do with our babies. It was said by the greatest of prophets from time immemorial, no man takes my life from me, I lay my life down. You can't take off with people's children without expecting a violent reaction. If we can't live in peace, then let's die in peace. We've been so betrayed. We have been so terribly betrayed. So my opinion is that we be kind to children and be kind to seniors and take the portion like they used to take in ancient Greece and step over quietly, because we are not committing suicide. It's a revolutionary act. We can't go back. They won't leave us alone. They're now going back to tell more lies, which means more congressmen. And there's no way, no way we can survive. For months I've tried to keep this thing from happening, but I now see it's the will of sovereign being that this happened to us. That we lay down our lives in protest against what's being done. The criminality of people, the cruelty of people. Who walked out of here today? Did you notice who walked out? Mostly white people. Mostly white people walked. I'm so grateful for the ones that didn't, those who knew who they are. But there's no point to this. We are born before our time. They won't accept us. And I don't think we should sit here and take any more time for our children to be endangered, because if they come after our children and we give them our children, then our children will suffer forever. They invaded our privacy. They came into our home. They followed us 6,000 miles away. The Red Brigade showed them justice. The congressman's dead. Please get us some medication. It's simple. It's simple. There's no convulsions with it. It's just simple. Just please get it. Before it's too late, the GDF will be here. I tell you, get moving. Get moving. Get moving. Yeah. Don't be afraid to die. If these people land out here, they'll torture some of our children here. They'll torture our people. They'll torture our seniors. We cannot have this. Are you going to separate yourself from whoever shot the congressman? I don't know who shot him. You got to move. Are you going to get the medication here? You got to move. Marston, there's about 40 minutes.
You have to move, and the people that are standing there in the aisle, go stay in the radio room yard. But everybody get behind the table and back this way, okay? There's nothing to worry about. Everybody keep calm and try and keep your children calm. And the older children are going to help love the little children and reassure them. I'm crying from pain. It's just a little bitter tasting, but they're not crying out of any pain.
It's hard. Only at first is it hard. It's hard only at first. Living, you're looking at death. It only looks, living is much, much more difficult. Raising up every morning and not knowing what's going to be the night's bringing. It's much more difficult.
I just want to say something to everyone that I see that is standing around and crying. This is nothing to cry about. This is something we should all rejoice about. We should be happy about this. They always told us that we should cry when you're coming into this world. Well, when we're living and we're living it peaceful, I think we should be happy about this. I was just thinking about Jim Jones. He just has suffered and suffered and suffered. He is the only God, and he don't even have a chance to enjoy himself here. So I'm looking at so many people crying. I wish you would not cry and just thank Father. Just thank him.
Okay.
Please, for God's sakes, let's get on with it. We've lived as no other people have lived and loved. We've had as much of this world as you're going to get. Let's just be done with it. Let's be done with the agony of it. It's far, far harder to have to watch you every day die slowly. And from the time you're a child to the time you get gray, you're dying.
This is a revolutionary suicide. This is not a self-destructive suicide. So they'll pay for this. They brought this upon us. And they'll pay for that. I leave that destiny to them. Who wants to go with their child has a right to go with their child. I think it's humane. I want to go. I want to see you go, though. They can take me and do with me whatever they want to do. I want to see you go. I don't want to see you go through this hell no more. No more, no more, no more. We're trying. So everybody will relax. The best thing you do to relax, and you'll have no problem. You'll have no problem with the thing if you just relax. The way the children are laying there now, I'd rather see them laid like that than to see them have to die like the Jews did, which was pitiful anyhow. And I'd just like to thank Dad for giving us life and also death. And I appreciate the fact the way our children are going. Because like Dad said, when they come in, what they're going to do to our children, they're going to massacre our children.
It's not to be feared. It is not to be feared. It's a friend. It's a friend. You're sitting there. Show your love for one another. Let's get calm. Let's get calm. To us, we had nothing we could do. We can't separate ourselves from our own people. They've robbed us of our land, and they've taken us and driven us, and we tried to find ourselves. We tried to find a new beginning, but it's too late. You can't separate yourself from your brother and your sister. No way I'm going to do it. I refuse. I don't know who fired the shot. I don't know who killed the congressman. But as far as I'm concerned, I killed him. You understand what I'm saying? I killed him. He had no business coming. I told him not to come. I was to respect, die with a degree of dignity. Lay down your life with dignity. Don't lay down with tears and agony. It's nothing to death. It's like Max said, it's just stepping over into another plane. Don't be this way. Stop this hysterics. This is not the way for people who are socialists or communists to die. No way for us to die. We must die with some dignity. Soon we'll have no choice. Now we have some choice. But children, it's just something to put you to rest. Oh, God. Mother, 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 please. Mother, please, 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 don't do this, don't do this. Lay down your life with your child, but don't do this. Free at last. Peace. Keep your emotions down, keep your emotions down. Children, it will not hurt if you'll be quiet, if you'll be quiet. I tell you, I don't care how many screams you hear, I don't care how many anguished cries, death is a million times preferable to 10 more days of this life. If you knew what was ahead of you, if you knew what was ahead of you, you'd be glad to be stepping over tonight. Death, death, death is common to people. And the Eskimos, they take death in their stride. Let's be dignified. If you'll quit telling them they're dying, if you adults would stop some of this nonsense, Adults, I call on you to stop this nonsense. I call on you to quit exciting your children when all they're doing is going to quiet rest. I call on you to stop this now, if you have any respect at all. Are we black, proud, and socialist, or what are we? Now stop this nonsense. Don't carry this on anymore. You're exciting your children. No sorrow that it's all over. I'm glad it's over. Hurry, hurry, my children, hurry. All I say, let's not fall into the hands of the enemy. Hurry, my children. Quickly, 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 quickly. No more pain, Al. No more pain, I said, Al. No more pain. We're not letting them take our life. We're laying down our life. We're taking their lives. We just want peace. Talking to them, all they're doing is taking a drink to go to sleep. That's what death is, sleep. Tired of it, I'm tired of it all. do. He doesn't want to tell him. All he's doing, if they will tell him, assure these children. Can some people assure these children of the relaxation of stepping over to the next plane? We've set an example for others. We've set 1,000 people who say we don't like the way the world is. Take our life from us. We laid it down. We got tired. We didn't commit suicide. We committed an act of revolutionary suicide protesting the conditions of an inhumane world.
As Jones was speaking, people were lined up in a queue in front of the tub of poison. Parents were given syringes of the liquid and instructed to give it to their babies and children first, and then given a cup of the liquid for themselves. As they had practiced this ritual many times before during other white nights, many thought it was just another drill. However, the grim reality of the situation became apparent, as people were seen frothing at the mouth and having convulsions as the poison started to take effect. As people died, Jones's staff took them outside of the pavilion and laid them face down on the ground, placing family members together and placing their arms across each other, trying to stage the scene as though they happily lay down together to die. But as space ran out, they had to put bodies on top of one another. There are photos of this tragic scene which were taken the following day after the massacre had been discovered. The full length of the death tape went for 45 minutes and it can easily be found on YouTube. And you can hear one woman questioning the need for everyone to die. She and Jones can be heard having a lengthy discussion where she tries to offer other solutions rather than for everyone to die. It was a very civil discussion. She wasn't angry or hysterical about what was going to happen, but her view seemed to be the exception. You can hear many others accepting their fate. So it made me wonder, what happened to her? Did she die willingly like so many others had? It turned out that she had resisted taking the poison, as a number of others did, after they realized it wasn't a drill, and when they witnessed people going through agonizing deaths. But those who resisted were forcibly injected with the poison. So it was clear that Jones did not want a single person to remain behind. When the bodies were discovered the next day, the injection points could be seen on their arms, and many still had needles embedded in their arms. However, there were some who didn't want to die, and they somehow managed to sneak away, avoiding the men with crossbows and rifles who were there to force compliance. While the audio itself is disturbing, imagine being someone there who witnessed what happened, but ultimately decided to save themselves. Here is what one survivor recalled.
When did people start to die? I mean, who started to die first? How did it go?
Jim Jones said, must do the babies first, take care of the babies first. So at that time, we were having nurses and going out, picking up babies out of mothers' arms, and mothers, some of the mothers themselves were coming up with their babies, and they were forced to take the potion.
Where did they take the babies? Into that back area and lay them down on the ground?
They took them from after they injected them and took the poison, they took them and they laid them right outside the pavilion, right off into the garden where they and was planting, where they was planting food and so forth. They laid them right out there.
So all the babies were laid out there dead?
Yes.
What about people who didn't want to die and they saw all this going on?
People that didn't want to die, a lot of people didn't want to die. They were just sitting there, frightened, afraid. Jim continually saying, hurry, hurry, we must all do this. We must all die. We must die with dignity and so forth. And that began to come out of his seat and go flowing through the audience where the people were sitting and beginning to pull him up out of their seats and lead him on into the where the portion was. And
did they go willingly?
Little struggle. Wasn't very much struggle. Just some. I seen one in one case, she struggled pretty hard because she didn't want to die.
And how did they kill her?
They injected her in the arm. Only thing I was trying to do was trying to figure a way out of it, because I never believed in taking my life. I never believed it. Suicidal.
How did you get out of it?
I managed to slip through one of the guards.
The guards with the crossbows?
Yes.
Do they also have rifles?
There was rifles around. There were rifles around when Jim Jones was going through the crowd of the people. There was rifles farther off in different areas. Were mostly what was around the pavilion where people were throwing arrows, flowing around circle in a circle like. Their orders was if anybody was to run, shoot them. Didn't let nobody run.
You only saw a few people struggling.
Yes.
That tells me that most of them. Well, what does it tell me? Does it tell me that most of them were willing to die, or most of them were too afraid to do anything else? Tell me.
I would say that most of them was too afraid to do anything because of the weapons, because of the pressure that they were under.
Another man who was there that night lived to tell his story. Tim Carter had been part of Jones's trusted inner circle. He listened to Jones speaking and saw the tubs of poison being prepared. His own wife and one-year-old son were there that night. Here he describes what happened next.
Maria Katsaras approached me from the radio room and she said, "Come here, I think I have something for you to do." She said, "Mike Prokes has a mission. He has some suitcases that have to be delivered to the Soviet embassy in Georgetown, but they're too heavy. He can't take them all by himself." It turned out to be $1.5 million. She said, "If you make it that far," she goes, "take what you need to live on and have a good life." She says, "but under no circumstances are you to be caught." She goes, "if you're caught, then you're to kill yourself." Mike Prokes said, "you need to go ask Jim if he wants the truck to take us to the front gate." As I walked up to the back of the pavilion, I looked to my right and I saw my wife with our son in her arms and poison being injected into his mouth. I felt, this isn't happening. This can't be happening. This is unreal. I don't know how to even process this. They're murdering my son. And I took a step up on stage and I asked the question that I was supposed to ask. "Do you want the truck to take us to the front gate?" I had a gun. I thought about shooting Jim Jones. He might die. I definitely will die. Will it stop everything that's going on? And I just thought of Gloria Malcolm. I stepped off the stage and she was kneeling down. Malcolm was dead, and I held her and said, I love you, I love you, I love you so much, I love you so much, I love you so much, and she died in my arms. And after she died, I really didn't care about anything at all, except I wasn't going to die there. When I left Jonestown with those suitcases, my only goal was to get out alive. We dumped the money on the way to Port Kaituma. My days with People's Temple and Jim Jones were done. I wasn't going to carry out any mission.
Instead, they threw the suitcases into the jungle and made their way back to town, where they gave themselves up at the police station. They informed them about the money, and the suitcases were later retrieved. The men were then returned to the compound and were given the task of trying to identify the deceased people. Now, decades later, Tim obviously regrets his actions, and one lingering memory he has is the smell of the cyanide. He said it smells like almonds, so to this day he cannot eat or smell almonds. So while everything was playing out at the compound, there were several people who were hiding in the jungle next to the airstrip. Among them were Gerald Parks and his two daughters. The three of them ended up losing contact with one another. Gerald searched desperately for them. 12-year-old Tracy and her sister were among a group of five children who managed to stay together, but they were desperately fearful that the gunman would find them and kill them. As night descended, they huddled together trying to keep warm. They were then frightened by a helicopter flying overhead, which was shining lights down into the jungle. They hid and kept quiet, thinking it was Jones trying to find them. And they were also frightened by the sound of more gunshots, which they thought was coming from the airstrip. But the shots were actually coming from Jonestown. And we'll find out what that was later. The next day, the children slowly tried to make their way through the thick jungle, hoping to find a way out. As the day progressed, they suffered increasingly from thirst and hunger, but they were forced to spend another night in the jungle. The next day, they somehow managed to find their way back to the airstrip, but of course they were afraid to come out. But then they saw police and their ordeal was finally over. By that time, Gerald had also been able to make his way out and was reunited with his daughters. And what about Vernon? He had been shot two times, but was eventually found by searchers who had been looking for those who had fled. At first, he was fearful when he heard the sounds of people's voices, believing them to be the gunmen. But he was rescued and managed to somehow survive his ordeal and tell the story of the events on the airstrip. And Jones's son, Stephen, his decision to leave the Georgetown house ultimately ended in him being one of the few members of the temple that managed to survive. He obviously had a clear presence of mind to decide not to join the masses of people who took their lives that day. But in the aftermath, some things soon came to make sense to him. He now understood why his mother defied his father and tried to convince him to allow the basketball team to go to the tournament. It seemed clear she wanted her son out of Jonestown when the mass suicides took place, because she wanted him to live. And on the day that Stephen defied his father and refused to return to Jonestown, she didn't press the matter. She said goodbye to him when he left the house for the basketball game, and he also noticed that she had a tear in her eye, and he now knew why. She knew that would be the last time that she would see him. Stephen had seen how his father had gone crazy, how he was abusing drugs, and his health was declining. Stephen could see how his father was starting to lose control of the temple and strongly sensed that something was about to happen. The following morning, on the Sunday, the bodies of more than 900 people lay scattered outside the pavilion. It was then that a survivor emerged from hiding under her bed to witness the carnage that stood before her. She was a 76-year-old black woman who had listened to Jones preaching the night before. And when he spoke of the killings on the airstrip, she retreated to her room and hid under the bed. She fell asleep and then woke up the next morning, but initially had no idea of what had happened. Quote, "When I got outside, it was like a ghost town. I didn't see or hear anybody. I said, 'Oh God, they came and they killed them all, and I was the only one alive. Why didn't they take me too?' But of course, it wouldn't be long before she came upon the gruesome scene." There were also two others there that night who refused to die. A 79-year-old man who was hearing impaired hadn't heard the announcement. But once he became aware of what was happening, he laid down in a ditch and pretended to be dead. Another man volunteered to fetch a stethoscope to check that people had died, but ultimately decided to save himself and hid under a building. The final death toll was 918 people, which included those who died at the airstrip. Jim Jones himself was found dead from a gunshot wound. And one of his nurses was also found shot dead right next to him. But it was never determined whether he killed her first and then took his own life or the other way around. Many have speculated that Jones was too much of a coward to shoot himself. But I guess we will never know. So this must have been the gunshots that 12-year-old Tracy heard while hiding in the jungle after the attack on the airstrip. Everyone else at Jonestown had died from the poison. His wife, Marceline, also died, along with two of their children who were aged 36 and 22, and also their young children. Other members of the Jones inner circle were found dead together in another cottage. So it appears that after they had taken care of the temple members, they then took their own lives. Jones's young son was one of those found there, the boy at the center of the custody battle. Jones himself spoke on the death tape that his son would die with everyone else. He said, quote, "Do you think I would put John's life above others? He's not different to me than any of these children." However, 33 people survived, either by leaving with the congressman or hiding. And as we also saw, two of Jones's inner circle also escaped. Plus, there was also an interesting story about Jones's two lawyers. They both managed to escape together into the jungle, but both later accused each other of knowing about the impending suicide pact and failing to take action to prevent it. One even accused the other of knowing about it for a whole year prior, and that even the US State Department, the FBI, and the CIA also knew what Jones had planned to do. They continued slinging each other in the press, but nothing was positively proven about what each of their involvements had been. But it's very interesting that they had escaped together, but then publicly berated each other. In the aftermath of the tragedy, the compound was thoroughly searched, and the FBI did a comprehensive cataloguing of all the documents that were found, including the so-called death tape. Among these was a very interesting letter written by someone on the night of the deaths. Have a listen as I read this letter to you. To whomever finds this note, collect all the tapes, all the writing, all the history. The story of this movement, this action, must be examined over and over. It must be understood in all of its incredible dimensions. We have pledged our lives to this great cause. We are proud to have something to die for. We do not fear death. We hope that the world would someday realize the ideals of brotherhood, justice, and equality that Jim Jones has lived and died for. We have all chosen to die for this cause. We know there is no way that we can avoid misinterpretation, but Jim Jones and this movement were born too soon. The world was not yet ready to let us live. This is the last day of our lives. May the world find a way to a new birth of social justice. if there is any way that our lives and the life of Jim Jones can ever help that take place, we will not have lived in vain. Jim Jones did not order anyone to attack or kill anyone. It was done by individuals who had too much of seeing people try to destroy this movement. Jim Jones. Their actions have left us no alternative, and rather than see this cause decimated, we have chosen to give our lives. We are proud of that choice. Please try to understand. Look at Jonestown. See what we have tried to do. This was a monument to life, to the renewal of the human spirit, broken by capitalism, by a system of exploitation and injustice. Look at all that was built by our beleaguered people. We did not want this kind of ending. We wanted to live, to shine, to bring light to a world that is dying for a little bit of love. To those who left behind of our loved ones, many of whom will not understand, who never knew this truth, grieve not. We are grateful for this opportunity to bear witness. A bitter witness. History has chosen our destiny in spite of our own desire to forge our own. We were at a cross purpose with history, but we are calm in this hour of our collective leave-taking. As I write these words, people are silently amassed, taking a quick potion, inducing sleep, relief. We are a long-suffering people. Many of us are now dead. Each moment another passes over to a peace. We are begging only for some understanding. It will take more than small minds, reporters' minds, to fathom these events. Something must come of this. Beyond all the circumstances surrounding the immediate event, someone can perhaps find the symbolic, the eternal in this moment, the meaning of a people, a struggle. I wish I had time to put it all together, that I had done it. I did not do it. I failed to write the book. Someone else, others will have to do this. Please study this movement from the very origins of Jim Jones in the rural poverty of Indiana, out from the heart of the America that he later was to stand against for its betrayal of its ideals. There is quiet as we leave this world. The sky is grey. People file slowly and take the somewhat bitter drink. Many more must drink. Our destiny. It is sad that we could not let our light shine in truth. Unclouded by the demons of accident, circumstance, miscalculation, error that was not our intent, beyond our intent. I hope that someone writes this whole story. It is not news, it is more. People hugging each other, embracing. We are hurrying. We do not want to be captured. We want to bear witness at once. We did not want it this way. All was going well as Ryan completed his first day here. Then a man tried to attack him, unsuccessfully at some time. Several set out into the jungle wanting to overtake Ryan, his aide, and the others who left with him. They did, and several killed. When we heard this, we had no choice. We would be taken. We have to go as one. We want to live as people's temple or end it. We have chosen. It is finished. Let all the story of this people's temple be told. Let all the books be opened. This site, oh terrible victory, how bitter that we did not, could not, that Jim Jones was crushed by a world that he didn't make. How great the victory. If nobody understands, it matters not. I am ready to die now. Darkness settles over Jonestown on its last day on earth. Following their deaths, it was discovered that Jones and his wife had updated their wills only a week before the damning article was due to be published about Jonestown. The wills revealed that they wish their assets to be shared between their children, all except two of them. Their adopted Korean daughter had married, and she and her husband had been temple members, until they eventually left and joined many of the other outspoken opponents of the temple. So this is believed to be the reason why she was left out of the will. But it was also reported that the reason she left the temple was because Jones had made sexual advances towards her. In the years that followed, she never told anyone that she had been raised by him, and she tried to keep it from her children. Jones's first adopted child was also left out of the will. She had had a love-hate relationship with the People's Temple, leaving and rejoining several times. She went on to marry and have four children, and her whole family were amongst the dead at Jonestown. So perhaps her actions of leaving and rejoining the temple had eroded Jones's trust in her. One final clause in the wills stated that in the event that none of their children survived their parents' death by 6 months, then the estate was to be donated to the Communist Party of the USA. Also found was a letter written by Jones's wife, Marceline, which was dated on the day of the tragedy, which reads as follows. To whom it may concern. I, Marceline Jones, leave all bank assets in my name to the Communist Party of the USSR. Please be sure that these assets do get to the USSR. I especially request that none of these are allowed to get into the hands of my adopted daughter, Suzanne Jones Cardmell. For anyone who finds this letter, please honour this request, as it is most important to myself and my husband, James W. Jones. I swear under penalty of perjury, the above is true and correct. So, what happened to the 900 or so people who died at Jonestown? The Guyanese government refused permission for them to be buried in their country. And would you believe that even cemetery after cemetery in the US also refused to bury them? They allegedly were fearful of retaliation, that the cemetery may be targeted by violence. So these poor people were left at a military base in the US for 5 months until finally a cemetery in Oakland, California, eventually agreed to accept them. Jim Jones was cremated and his ashes were scattered in the Atlantic Ocean. Marceline's body was returned to a cemetery in Richmond. The cremated remains of their daughter and son, Agnes and Lou Eric, were later buried beside her. The grandchildren were also buried in a mass grave in San Francisco with other Jonestown children. Today, four of the Jonestown children are still alive. Stephen, Jim Jr., Suzanne and Tim Tupper Jones. Now let's look at the man who fired the shots in the plane at the airstrip. At his trial, he gave evidence that he was instructed to go to the airstrip and kill the congressman and was given a gun. He had shot and injured two people and therefore was only charged with conspiracy to murder. He was sentenced to 20 years prison but was released after 18 years, partly due to an appeal that Vernon Gosney made on his behalf, despite being shot by the man. His reason for supporting the early release was as follows, quote, "We were both deceived by Jim Jones, and I began to see him as someone who was more like me, rather than someone who shot me. I just wanted to be free, and that was my way of doing it." And it's interesting to note that this man turned out to be the only person arrested and convicted for the crimes of that day. There were no repercussions for Jones's lawyers or anyone else associated with Jonestown. After Jonestown, Vernon went through a dark time in his life, suffering from mental health issues, alcoholism, and drug abuse, as he tried to come to terms with what had happened, and in particular, his decision to leave his son behind. And here is some audio of Vernon speaking.
The people that died in Jonestown were my family. And they were my family when my family wasn't my family. And they're all just really few wonderful, good people who wanted to make a positive change in the world. The first time I thought about the consequences of Jonestown and what had happened when I was in a military hospital in Puerto Rico, and a military psychiatrist came to speak to me and tell me that my son was dead. The loss of my son has been the most difficult thing in my life to deal with. My sense of remorse, my sense of guilt, my going back to that moment a million times and making a different decision. To find some level of peace and some level of forgiveness has been the most challenging thing for me.
However, I was pleased to read that today he is in a much better place. It was determined that Congressman Ryan had been shot 20 times. He had been warned of the possible danger of going to Jonestown, but he wasn't intimidated. Jackie Speier, his aide, said, quote, "There are those who questioned his motive, the wisdom of his actions, but criticism was just fine with Leo. Leo Ryan never did anything if he thought it would make him popular. He was more interested in doing what he thought was right." So, what happened to the Jonestown site? It was taken over by the Guyanese government, who initially used it to house refugees. But after a few years, it became totally deserted, and then a fire destroyed everything and the ruins were left to decay. The local Guyanese people didn't want to use the land because of the social stigma associated with the murders and the suicides. And now let's take a closer look at the poison used at Jonestown, as it went on to spawn a phrase which is now in common use. The poison was mixed in with a popular drink at the time, which was called Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid is an American brand of flavoured powdered drink mix, which was introduced in 1927. As a result of the Jonestown massacre, the term drink the Kool-Aid has become part of common vernacular. It means to follow someone blindly, and even four decades later, Americans often use this phrase in political and business contexts without knowing its actual origin. The expression was born of the perception that Jim Jones's disciples were gullible people who gladly drank the poison because their leader told them to. This dismissive thinking was convenient because it's hard to comprehend how so many people marched together to a certain and unnecessary death. However, there is some uncertainty around the drink, Kool-Aid, because in the compound they also found boxes of another type of a similar drink mix called Flavor-Aid, which was actually a cheaper imitation used at the time. So it's believed that both of them were used. But the Kool-Aid was preferred in the press from that time on, probably because it was actually more popular in the US at the time. Perhaps also Kool-Aid was catchier than Flavor-Aid. And finally, I need to make mention of how Jonestown has been referred to as a mass suicide. As we have seen, this is not accurate. While some people did make the choice to take their own lives, others were forcibly injected with the poison. The children certainly didn't commit suicide. So I think it's important not to refer to Jonestown as mass suicide, but as mass murder. So that brings us to the end of this episode, and initially I thought it would be the final chapter in the Jonestown story. However, in order to try to make some sense of what happened at Jonestown, I thought it would be necessary to take a look at the people who were closest to Jim Jones, his sons and his wife. So in the next episode, you're going to hear from his biological son, Stephen, and Jim Jones Jr., his adopted son. And what about the woman behind the man? Who was she? And was she as culpable in what happened at Jonestown? So, bye for now, and remember to be a good apple.